Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
Hello, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Deep Dive. Week 5 approaches. We've got a quarter of the NFL season in the books. We don't really know who's good or who's bad yet, except for a couple of teams. Injuries have kind of put us in a tight spot in a lot of games on this card. And as you look at the slate overall, you'll notice there's fewer games than usual because we are dealing with 4 teams on bye this week. The first week when there's bye games and you have a narrower card is always a little bit of a tricky week. We didn't really talk or plan to talk about this, but I'm just curious, do you have any thoughts on the bye week, Andy, and how you handle the bye week going in and out of your what's the philosophy in That's terms just, of handling your bye week? Teams coming up on their bye week and teams coming out of their bye.
I thought you meant on the bye week. It's 4 teams I won't bet on this week. Pretty simple.
That's pretty straightforward. That's good advice for our folks at home. Yeah, it's very difficult to lose or beat your bye.
I don't know if I do much of an adjustment or call it a situational spot the week before a bye, but obviously going forward here, we're going to start looking at teams coming off the bye. And granted, I guess we had that in week 2 a little bit, but that was just some weird stuff with the Hurricane stuff with the 2 Florida teams. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Looking forward through the season here, through it'll be weeks 6 through like 14. I think they do a couple buys in week 13. So you That's have true. A yeah. bunch of a bunch of weeks in a row where you'll have 2, 3, 4, whatever it is. Teams coming, it can't be 3, that'd be ridiculous. 2 or 4 teams coming off a bye every 4, week. 6, 8. And, those are instant situational spots to look at, especially, if you got an angle on the other team where maybe you need to be selling high on the team or buying low, and then they're also facing someone off a bye or coming off a bye themselves. Really make it easier to back or fade a team, just depending. And we'll talk about that every week as we go forward. Team is up and by. Granted, it's going to be built into the Lions, but it still helps.
There's a couple of angles that it might worth kind of bringing up and see what you think here. Obviously, teams coming out of a bye are rested, and they've had 2 weeks to prepare for their opponent. Like, they know specifically who their opponent's going to be. Coaches give the players a week off to rest there and heal their bodies. Guys who are kind of hurt, who they had been kind of keeping on the shelf, usually come off and buy pretty healthy. All of those things are clearly known by the bookmakers. You're not going to find an obvious edge just because, teams are coming off of a bye. Short of the Chiefs and Andy Reid, for whatever reason, like, the market still undervalues his, the extra little bit of angle he has prepping in for a team off the bye.
Yeah, 2 touchdown investment for him.
Right. Everyone else, though, the market miles. Knows. Like, it's not a surprise. Like, everyone knows where the buys are on schedule. So it's not, it's not an obvious, this is a team to bet on because they're coming off the bye. It's a lot more like if you're doing your own numbers, if you're doing your own projections, if you're trying to come up with numerical model, you just absolutely have to factor in what the bye meant to that team in terms of they're getting the rest they need. They have a wise and coaching staff that's taking advantage of the bye, and they're going to come out either fired up or flat. I've seen the bye a lot of times. You remember
disservice,
this? Especially
sometimes it can be a disservice to a team who's just starting absolutely. To get hot. They rattle off 3 games in a row. And yep. cool. It's like the defense taking a timeout against an offense. It's just clicking, and it cools them down like that. So it really depends.
Really depends
where it falls. So
I'm a little interested to see what we how that plays into the Broncos next week. Next week the Broncos are coming off their bye. They're going at the New York Giants. It's obvious. That's going to be a spot where I wouldn't be surprised if you see a lot of public support for the Broncos because they're coming off their bye. But, this is a team that spent 3 of their first 4 weeks they played at home. Before that, they had 2 weeks in a row of the preseason at home. So, really, like, this team barely has left Denver. That gave him the opportunity to really, you know, put a nice start to their season, 3-1 with some wins against the Dallas Cowboys and the Chargers and the Oakland Raiders, all teams people expected to kind of be in the playoff hunt. So they put together a really nice start to their season, but I could entirely see a situation where this bye kind of throws a little bit of cold water on that team. Maybe we see a little bit of a lackluster performance next week in New York. So that's an interesting spot. And then I'll mention one other one because it's going to come
Atlanta
up today.
Really is from that. I mean, just the injuries, giving them an extra week. They need their receivers to get healthy.
They need their receivers healthy. They rely on them so much for their game planning, and they're clearly they look like they're suffering a little bit this year without Kyle Shanahan in terms of coming up with innovative offense. That was pretty obvious, especially after Julio Jones and Sanu went down in the game against Buffalo. So they're a team that you could probably look to have a really nice bounce back performance out of the bye if they, you know, kind of rally the troops a little bit. The other angle, interestingly enough, that I haven't fully incorporated this necessarily, but I suspect that we'll start to see some of this is, you get a relatively young team that's pretty high on themselves and their performance over the first quarter of the season that has the bye coming up. And I think we could qualify Buffalo Bills as that sort of a team. The Bills are heading into their bye after this week when they are playing the Bengals. And they've gotten a couple of big wins against the Broncos, big win, a huge win against the Falcons that, as 8-point dogs. I think you could see the Bills kind of satisfied with their performance over the first quarter of the season, just looking to get to the bye to get healthy. We've talked about this ad nauseum about the double rest in a row spot, double travel in a row spot. And they're traveling. They went to Atlanta last week. This week they go to Cincinnati. So now this is your second week in a row on the road, and your defense has been playing absolutely the most physical of all of the defenses out there. Number one in defensive DVOA from Football Outsiders through 4 weeks in the season, which is absolutely, very surprising given that they let Stephon Gilmore walk and he's down stinking it up in New England now. But the Bills, have been playing extremely physical defense. That's gotta reach a breaking point at some point. And the Bengals, they seem to have finally figured out a little bit on offense with the Bill Lazor's kind of up-tempo deal. So that's an interesting look there, and maybe incorporate a little bit of the potential letdown for the Bills heading into this matchup against the Bengals before they go into their bye.
Yeah, the Lions are showing too, as far as you've got a 1-3 team.
Yeah,
basically
it is.
Calling them, the same team, the Bengals and the Bills right now, 3-point favorite at home.
Right, right.
Which and the Bills, I don't know how I feel about that. Very low total on that. There's a couple very low totals sitting under a couple of 39s up there this week. I thought, Jets, Browns too, and then Ravens, Raiders, 39.
Yep.
The Vikings, Bears, I don't know if you've seen any totals on that. I think they're kind of waiting on things there, but I expect that to be
42. Yeah, I would too. I'm thinking we're going to see 41 points or so in that game. Interesting, as you do look up and down the board at the totals and the lines, a lot of short lines, a lot of them. I'm seeing, actually, of all of these, only the Steelers, the only team, they're hosting the Jags, the only team laying more than a touchdown this week. And then two other teams, the Pats and the Eagles, also favored over a field goal. Other than that, up and down the board, we are looking at -3 or under in almost every one of these games. And granted, a lot of these matchups are extremely not sexy matchups. McCown Kaiser is pretty uninspiring. The potential Castle Cutler matchup might be among the worst we see all season. Brian Hoyer, Jacoby Brissett is not interesting. And as we talked about on Monday, Flacco, EJ Manuel, if they decide not to play that one, I don't think anyone's really going to be that upset. You have a lot of coin flips on this card here this week, and a lot of, going to be interesting to see how some of these play out, because there's a lot of whack games.
This is limiting your card a little bit. Yeah, I haven't fallen in love with very much this week, which it's, you know, sometimes you feel like, I have to play more than this. I've been looking for that week. I've had a few good weeks in a row, and I've been looking for that regression week. So maybe the best way to stay away from that is just not to force a bunch of plays. And not to say I won't make more plays than I have. I only have two or three on my card right now, but I think I want to see how some of these totals move day of the game, maybe go against that if some of these totals get steamed up a little by some early morning betting, and watch some of the late moves, see what's cracking in some of these three-point games, maybe get a little better idea where the public's at and where some other people are at, and see if I can lean the same way if that's how I'm feeling. I've leaned in a few games, but there's nothing I'm pulling triggers on too much so far.
I hear you.
So where do you want to start?
Let's start with Thursday night football. The Thursday night game has drawn the most interest by far so far. I'm seeing about 14,000 tickets already placed on this game, which is a lot for Wednesday. Thursday game. And it's probably because it's the Patriots. And the Patriots-Bucks, I don't know, this is probably a top three game of the week, maybe? Yeah, this is probably the third best game of the week, I'll say.
If you like offense.
If you like offense, especially. Yeah, that's right. Man, the Patriots defense really is the question mark in this game. If you're going to back the Patriots, then you – and I did back the Patriots. I said I wasn't going to on Monday, and here we are Wednesday, and I've already placed a bet on the Patriots. The defense really, you know, is through 4 weeks, I don't think you can make any argument that they are not the 32nd best defense that we've seen play football for 4 weeks. Looking at the advanced metrics, it's not even close, really. Like, they're by far away the worst, and they actually don't even have a strength. If you look at kind of the way that the passing and running and some of the different ways that people with the Texas team, they don't really have a strength. Yeah, it's all bad. In hindsight, they were lucky to beat the Houston Texans, and they were. The victory they had over the Saints, although they covered, wasn't all that impressive. We've talked about this a lot, and I still don't really have an opinion shift at this point. But, like, the Patriots clearly came into this season treating these first four games as an extended preseason. If I'm still saying this at week eight, then, you know, by all means, call me out.
I'm ready to call you out on week four. I think I might need to fly my happy ass to California and pull those Patriots colored rose tinted glasses off your face.
Well, man,
we had a little back and forth on Twitter earlier, and it was just I get that he's a great coach, maybe the best coach we've ever seen.
The hoodie is a genius.
But you can't coach team speed. And unless they get some younger, faster, better players, they're not fast. They just look very slow to the ball. Yeah. It's just bad. It looks really bad. Every time there's a big play, it's just like, man, they should have been able to avoid that for the third time on this drive. The only reason they're 2-2, they're averaging almost 33 points a game scored, and they're 2-2.
Their offense is carrying a heavy load right now. I will say this: so coming into the season, clearly the Patriots front seven was a lot of new names, a lot of new faces, a lot of guys that they were counting on who were young guys and guys who they went out and got in free agency, and guys who they traded draft picks for, really, you know, either never made their mark in the preseason, some of them didn't make the team. A lot of the high draft picks are either on IR or got cut. And in the front seven, they just didn't look particularly strong, but you kind of assumed that through scheme and through, you know, through game planning, they would have some answers. And, you know, Belichick has always played a bend but don't break defense. He's always focused his defensive philosophy around do not give up the home run play, keep the ball, keep the guys in front of you, and, you know, we'll concede yards, we'll still play great red zone defense. We'll, you know, have a feel for this other team's tendencies, and we'll turn them over in the red zone or stop them on the goal line. Yeah, that's always kind of been the way that they've gotten it done. It's never been like, at least since like 2004, probably, it's never been like they're so talented on defense that they are just stonewalling teams and no one really has a chance. The other thing that's going on, and, you know, and this year they spent money on a cornerback who's been a no-show through 4 weeks. Stephon Gilmore looks like he is, you know, he's fat and happy with the contract he got. I don't know how you motivate a guy like that who's never really had success, you know, never been on a winning, you know, a substantially winning team before. It came from Buffalo. Malcolm Butler, he wanted a contract. He was dissatisfied with what he's getting paid and what his contributions are. And here they pay another guy to come in and play on the other side of him, ostensibly the CB1. And now he's demoted to the CB2. I'm surprised that they went about doing that. And it looks like it's shown. You know, he's not playing particularly well. They got a bunch of CB3s. In the meantime, you know, McCourty's not playing particularly amazing. Like he's not playing to Pro Bowl level as he had in the past. Patrick Chung is who we thought he was. He's not a great safety, but, you know, at least, you know, he can tackle runners generally. But he hasn't been making particularly good plays. So, you know, it's tough to say that there is some magical move. People are hanging their hat on, oh, let's just move Hightower back. They have kind of been using him as kind of their means of generating pass rush. If they move him back to the middle of the second line of the defense, potentially he becomes a more impactful player just on a down-by-down basis. And, you know, he needs to get healthy too. He's obviously still limited by the injury he sustained week one. You know, all this goes to say, you know, I have a general general faith in Belichick that he has a game plan already worked out, that they spent, you know, him and Ernie Adams spent, you know, 2 weeks in June, like once they knew what the schedule was, getting ready for Tampa Bay, knowing this was a short week. The thing that ends up mattering in general on Thursdays is the experience of your coach, the experience of your quarterback. And you're talking about a more experienced coach and a more inexperienced quarterback in New England, Tom Brady. So for those reasons, coming off of an ugly loss in a game where they desperately need to get right, because going 2-3 puts them in a pretty precarious situation in the AFC, I am laying the points on the road with the Pats and looking for them to pull together somewhere in the 7 to 10 point win over the Bucks in a game that probably has north of 50 points. So yeah, that's where I'll be at.
I'm going to let you die up on that hill, so that's fine. and that was the Will trying to talk himself into the Patriots. It's changing the guard, I think. It's a little early to overreact, but I don't understand how the delusional Patriots fans, no offense to anyone, present company included. I mean, they might win 9 or 10 games just based off Brady slinging it the way he does and the Patriots get lucky. And I talk all this shit about the Patriots, but I'm so scared to take the points against them even on the road. But I am looking at that team total for Tampa Bay over 24.5. I don't see a situation where the Patriots are giving up more than that every week.
Yeah.
We've played a couple at home. Actually, they've looked better on the road, it seems like. But I'll be betting that over 24.5. I don't like 5.5. If I did play that, I would probably get on 5 times and play like the alternate +4, +108.
Mm-hmm.
If I was looking at
Tampa. Yeah, no, I think.
Or maybe even a Tampa Bay money line, 2-1. If you think the Patriots defense is not going to be able to, is what's his face back? Dougie Martin.
Doug Martin is back. He's been reinstated.
He was supposed to be back a week ago, but because of the weird hurricane situation, he actually missed last week's game because he had to go 3 games. So
yeah.
I don't know how much of a difference that makes, because I don't even think he was allowed to practice. Granted, he knows the system. He's been there. He's a tough little runner. And you got Mike Evans. You got the tight end. Ken had a nice little coming out last week. Yep. He looked good. And they're at home. Yeah. Short week favors defenses. Still, I can see this absolutely going over that 55. But I will be I'll be playing that over 24.5 and possibly alternate spread of like +4, +4.5 on Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
I'm betting it right now over 24.5.
I can't deny your logic. Winston tends to play better at home. Tampa overall plays better at home. I know they had this game circled. You know when you see New England come into your stadium on prime time that, you know, you are thinking about how you are going to hang one on the champs. And that's scary. All this is very, very reasonable to be concerned about. And if this, I can very, very easily rationalize this being kind of rock bottom for the Patriots this year. They show up and just absolutely get annihilated on defense. I mean, you're talking about Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson against a team that can't stop the pass and can't generate a pass rush. There is very clearly a scenario that plays out where Tampa Bay wins going away, and this is sort of the Patriots at the Chiefs rock bottom moment, going back to 2014, everyone remembers that, right? Patriots getting blown out on Monday Night Football in Arrowhead. This could be that moment. That said, they lost.
Yeah. Mobile quarterbacks have really, I'm not going to go out and call Alex Smith a mobile quarterback, although he had some nice runs the other night. But Cam and Watson, they had good games, especially even Watson. He's a young guy, hardly haven't played in the league yet, and he looked good. So I feel like Jameis, he can move around. He's the same kind of guy. He doesn't run quite as much as I feel like he should sometimes. But I think that he can put up some points on him. So the Patriots cover that 5.5. I think if they score 42.
You gotta
shoot for it. So,
well, I'm pulling for it. We'll see how it goes. I'm nervous. This is not a high confidence play. This is just a, back in Belichick.
Dance with who brung you.
Yeah. Boy, can you imagine if Patriots pick up 3 losses in their first 5 games? That'd be something. One last note on this, and then let's move on. You mentioned it, and you reminded me. Patriots have been sucking in Gillette. They're not playing well on that field. I've heard now almost every team that's gone in and come out has been whispering about how it's a shit field. And I'm wondering to what degree, there's the uncertainty to what degree are the Patriots trying to keep players healthy and being afraid of their own field? I don't know how that necessarily impacts the defense in terms of they're playing this poorly at home. They need to get right. I look forward to drowning my sorrows on Thursday night if it doesn't happen this week. So let's move on. The rest of the card on Sunday, no London game this week. Although I think the London NFL fans would have been fine if there were no games the last 2 weeks, because they got basically a 40-0 game against the Jaguars and the Ravens, and a 20-0 stinker in the Saints and the Dolphins. So the streak of no good London games kick continues, we got to wait until the 1:00 Eastern time slot for some action on Sunday. And we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games in the 1:00 slot. So presumably we should get some pretty amazing red zone action, which is exciting. Of these games, there's really only a handful that look consequential to the overall arc of the season and playoff picture. Carolina and Detroit is one of those. Do you want to start there?
Are they for reals? same thing with the Panthers. The Panthers were a little iffy to start the season, especially whatever the hell that was against the Bills, where they got the win, but it looked like a baseball score. But this is going to be very important for like NFC playoff positioning, even in this early season. I think if the Lions can get a nice win at home, Abdullah has another nice game. Stafford, he's got like a 7-1 touchdown interception ratio right now. He's not amazing, but he's been pretty good. He's thrown for like 800 yards in 4 games.
They're not
looking like the screw up Lions that
not yet. Not yet.
I don't know who had back in this one. I think I'm probably going to stay away from this one, just kind of learn from it. But I can see if the Lions can establish the running game again and just kind of do what they did against the Vikings, just take advantage of their opportunities. Yeah. And that was let's not talk about the Vikings game, I guess. But no need to rehash that. They only scored 14, but that was a tough fought 14 against a very good defense.
It was.
Don't think the defense good.
The Stafford, I'll say, he does have an impressive stat line, but he has been the beneficiary of a lot of drop picks so far this year.
Yeah, only about 7 or 8 in the last game.
Yeah, he's got a lot of balls hitting defensive backs in the hands and hitting the ground, which has been kind of his, guy walks under lights. I really just don't know what to say. All that said, I am interested in a Panthers letdown here. Panthers second week on the road. Panthers suffering from some pretty important injuries. Pretty much almost all of their playmakers and difference makers on offense and defense were limited in practice or missed practice today, which is not a good sign that they're going to be kind of focused and sharp heading into Detroit. Detroit on the flip side playing very healthy. And I like what the Patriots were able to do, exposing some of the aspects of the Panthers defense. And I think that the Lions have exactly the type of tools to replicate that success. And I think now Cam Newton's dealing with this bizarre sideshow that he created himself, calling out the reporter in Carolina.
I don't know what he just.
What was he thinking?
Like, calculated. He legitimately thought it was hilarious, like in his head. she was talking about routes. Like, it's
no one else in the room is laughing, and Cam can't get enough of a joke that's not funny.
Yeah, and it's silly. It's not like some really, really complicated, technical aspect of football. I mean, I don't know if you played football even at a junior high level. They hand you out a little. If you're any sort of receiver or back that's going to line up, there's a little route tree they draw for you, and it's 1 through 9, and some of them have names, and it's actually a pretty simple concept.
If you played Madden in your life, you know the route.
Yeah, I know some of these from.
You don't even have to have played.
it's a very simple concept, and he was thought it was hilarious that a lady knew about it. Like she oh got in on our secret. So, so that'll be fun, because that's why I hate ESPN anymore. Like, whenever there's something like that, I'm not going to hear about sports for another week. They're going to talk about
terrific.
But I definitely like that. I like that letdown. I like what you're saying with the travel spot. That is tough. Indoor game. It's pretty loud up there at old Ford Field.
Yep. The the one other angle on this one that makes me back the Lions is Cam Newton's, people are kind of, he's getting right. People are kind of talking up he's starting to play like the Cam Newton of old. That said, there were a couple passes against the Patriots that were just whack. Terrible passes, like inexcusable reads. And I mean, that's ironically, that's what necessitated all of this whole conversation about the Browtree thing. And you know, he's still throwing.
Yeah, it looks like he might not know what a rote tree is.
Yeah,
the joke might be on him. Like they say, post. Yeah. And he's running, yeah. Thrown into the middle of the field.
Is he deflecting because he doesn't really know what a rote tree is? No, all of this aside, the one strength the Detroit Lions defense has is they can turn teams over, and they are opportunistic. And they, I could see this being the type of game where people go in expecting to see Cam Newton kind of continue his progression into the old Cam Newton, and then walk out and he's thrown four completely just terrible balls. Three of them got picked. One of them gets taken to the house. So this is, that's why I'm looking for Detroit here. I don't have any angle on the total. They opened 43.5 and it's sitting at 44. If anything, this is the kind of game where Carolina and Detroit, these guys are going to be clawing for a wild card spot. I don't see Detroit winning the North. I don't see Carolina winning the South. And if they have playoff hopes, then they are going to be fighting with about six other teams, for the wild card scraps in the NFC. So this is a pretty meaningful game. And if neither team is generating a ton of offense in the first half, this is the kind of game I could see grind into like a well under the total kind of performance. But that said, you know, with the likelihood of these guys turning the ball over and giving each other short fields and being indoors.
Yeah, I was going to say, who's the best corner on the Patriots last week that they faced?
I guess Butler played a little better than Stephon Gilmore. But yeah, Butler was kind of
freelancing. Yeah, you know who's better than all those guys? Darius Slay.
That's like, correct. That is exactly very, right. That's very exactly cool. Right.
If Cam's gonna throw some stupid stuff, he might take one.
Great call.
He might pick a couple. And actually, they do have a nice little defense, so you can definitely see limiting Cam and not letting him get away with some of the stuff he got away with the other week, and maybe taking one at home. I think you might have talked me into a play.
Well, we mentioned, thank you, man.
Yay.
I still got it. Let me see. We mentioned this one already. I'll just circle back and mention it again. I backed Cincinnati -3, looking for a letdown from the Bills here, looking for the Bills defense to finally run out of gas a little bit, give the Bengals some breathing room to continue some momentum. Both these teams head into their bye next week. Bengals trying to get right. Bills patting themselves in the back. I think that, and you see the spread tells the story here, and the records are convincing the public, it looks like, to line up behind the Bills. I'm seeing 70% of tickets on the Bills, and the line's not moving. Standing pat at about Cincinnati -3. So that's an interesting side. The only other side that I grabbed in the early slate was Cleveland. I'm doing this again.
Here's one I agree with you on. I liked it at first, and then I didn't like it, and I didn't want to do it, and now it's just sitting at a pick'em, and I ended up betting this morning. Because this is going to sound ridiculous after the way I trashed the Jets, but the Jets are riding high right now.
Yeah.
You got to sell high.
They want two in a row at
home. You know,
sell high on the Jets, yeah.
Sell high on the New York Jets right now. So
you might get another chance later in the season to sell high on the Jets, but there's no better time than this week because no one wants to back the Browns. People and Kaiser has been an absolute turnover machine. Did you know he's on pace to throw 32 interceptions this season?
Yeah, he's got eight. Ooh. That's not great. Hopefully they work on that. They need to work on that this week because their defense isn't terrible. Yeah. They just need to work on him getting his reads and making some – hopefully they just simplify things even more maybe for him, Crowell and Johnson involved a little more and take some pressure off him. And
50 times.
Get Duke the ball. And I think they can win a game at home against the Jets. It's goddamn New York Jets.
I do. Oh,
that's one of the plays I absolutely will be on.
Yep.
Backing an 0-14 at home.
Okay. Kizer limits the turnover. You know, not all these interceptions have been Kaiser's fault. His wide receivers are doing him no favors. If they have a good game, finally. Hey, and Bo, by the way, it looks like we might see number one overall pick Myles Garrett. That might be exciting. Their defense has been bad, but if they get a couple playmakers, we haven't really seen Jamie Collins this year. We haven't seen Myles Garrett at all. If they get some of these pieces back and play a little bit more competitive defense, and then their offense is limiting the turnovers, I think we're going to see Cleveland get their first W of the season here. And getting plus money on the money line right now works for me.
They know this is their chance to get a win.
This is it.
You know, because their spots, they're not going to beat the Steelers. They're probably not going to beat some of these other teams. They just know they're going to go on the road and probably lose all of their road games. You get one of the other terrible teams at home. This is your chance. You don't want to be the team that goes 0-16. You want to be able to take advantage. And that, you know, this is their Super Bowl. They got to get this win.
Yep. I came into the week. Oh, let's move on. Jets, blah. Cleveland, hold your nose, backing them on the money line. Let's move on. Let's talk about another kind of interesting one. I came into the week expecting to be able to back Philadelphia. This one set up as like a, you know, Philadelphia finally coming home. They obviously made a trip out to the West Coast last weekend to play the Chargers. They played fine. The Chargers played poorly, the Eagles now sit at 3-1 alone at the top of the NFC East, surprisingly, but there you have it. And they have some substantial mismatches against the Arizona Cardinals, which I expect them to be able to take advantage of. I was hoping to see a line closer to 3.5 or 4 here. It opened at 6.5, and it sits 6.5 now, unfortunately. So I don't really have an edge on this one. Same with the total. I wanted to bet the over here, and I thought we would see it open at 43 or 44 because there's some perception that both of these teams have a pretty good defense, but I think actually both of these teams have some suspect defense, or they have some suspect areas in their defense that the opposite team could take advantage of. So I was hoping to get 43 or 44 and bet the over. It ended up opening at 45. And you need 47 or 48 to get the over, which is a pass. With the Eagles playing at home and the potential for them to take out, you know, 10, 14 point lead at some point and just kind of kill the clock and step on the Cardinals' throats. So I will be skipping this one. Is that a reasonable angle to skip, or do you think there's something there that I'm missing?
Yeah, I like Philly to win. I really like Philly to win, but I don't like laying those kind of points. Wentz has been a little uneven this season, and I mean last season.
That's
too.
True. It's just, no, that's
you,
true.
You get uneven. So I'm possibly looking to throw Philadelphia in like a fun money line parlay. Sometimes you get a couple of those teams, and let me look just real quick what that one would be. I mean, 6 points. You're talking,
we haven't
like 250, 275.
Yeah,
you know, you get them in the play. Get them in the Steelers in a money line parlay.
We're back in the Keystone Moneyline Parlay territory here.
You
two
don't
teams.
That again, aren't I?
Two teams.
I didn't even realize they did that again.
Can we throw Penn State in here? Is Penn State at home this weekend? I don't know.
I don't know.
Let's skip that. I think that does make sense. Philadelphia's money line parlay leg sounds good to me. I think, and in fact, if you want to kind of circle on this, we have never really talked about survivor pools, but of the survivor pool picks out there, I don't think there's a better one really than Philadelphia. I don't think you want to use Pittsburgh if you have them available. I think you want to save them for a better week. They are sitting, Pittsburgh, by the way, is sitting at -8.5. Again, this is a great spot for them. The Jags, this is their third week in a row on the road. They played in London, turned around, took no break, which cost them dearly on the road against the Jets last week. And now they turn around and fly back north to play Pittsburgh and Ben Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger still playing lackluster preseason type of football. I don't think we're going to see the best of Roethlisberger still for a couple more weeks. He may have a breakout game this weekend, but there's still some very bizarre stuff going on in that locker room, which would prevent me from laying 8.5 here, even though the Jags are in just a deadly spot. Also, Blake Bortles is so good in garbage time. I would really hate to be holding Pitt -8.5 and see some type of, you know, two touchdowns from the Jags in the last 14, in the last, you know, last two and a half, three minutes of the game.
No, this is, and if you, five dimes is sitting it at that -10 plus 115 where you do the drop down, you get it at the 8.5 where it's supposed to be, but they're screwing with me on this because I'd love this 8.5 and I'll go on another book and do this, but I will have Pittsburgh in a teaser, 6-point teaser, get them down to, you get them down to 3.5 and I have decided on the other leg. If I can do it, I think DSI will let me keep it open. Five dimes does, but they're not being very generous with the number. Yeah, they want to sit me on that 10. I don't want to take it to 4. I want to take it to 2.5. So
exactly.
Oh yeah, I'll find another spot for that. But yeah,
five dimes be great in a teaser. Never ends.
Yeah, they'll be good in a teaser somewhere here for me. But yeah, I see what you're saying though, because 43.5. What'd you get?
I got 43.5. I'm over 43.5 on this one.
It's just been sitting pat there, huh?
Yeah, well, it opened 45.5. It opened 45.5, and it actually dropped a point. I don't know why it went down. I don't think that you're going to see a particularly solid performance from the Jags D, given the fact that not only have they traveled as much as they traveled, but they played a whole extra quarter going, you know, almost the distance in overtime. Getting run down by the jackass Jets. The Steelers, on the other hand, you know, even though they have some issues, this is a game where they should score 31 comfortably. You know, Le'Veon Bell's due for a breakout. Antonio Brown's due for a breakout. Martavius Bryant is kind of quietly playing some amazing football. I'm not sure if you've seen some of the routes he's run, some of the open space he's been running in, but he is playing very well, and Roethlisberger just can't quite connect with him. If you see a couple of those connections with Bryant open up on the deep end, you're going to see, you know, Antonio Brown rack up 10 receptions in the short and medium game and see Le'Veon Bell, you know, score a couple touchdowns here. So I think Pittsburgh gets over their team total comfortably. And I think the potential for the Jags garbage time points is real. So I think I grabbed the over on this, and we'll see if we can get our 44 or more points in Pittsburgh on Sunday.
Yeah, we talked about that a little earlier. The team totals aren't up on five dimes yet, but the implied team total would be 26, which, like you're saying, that's a decent number. You'd think they'd be able to get there, get that offense moving like it should be going into the – you start getting in the middle of the season here, you got to be not losing to teams like the Bears if you want to be winning the AFC North and making some noise in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that was just on the offense. They should have scored a lot more points.
Yeah.
You know, they shouldn't let the Bears – and I had the Bears that day, but they shouldn't have let them stay the game that close.
Yeah. Yeah, they left a lot of points on the field in Chicago. So let's talk about a couple more totals here. We talked about this Monday. I ended up backing it. I'm pretty satisfied with the number I got. I'm on over 44 in – I'm sorry, actually, I'm over 43.5 on Niners Colts. This, again, the Niners have a decent offense. Shanahan is putting together some nice – schemes. He's getting the most out of Carlos Hyde, which is just great. Pierre Garçon is playing some pretty inspired football. Brian Hoyer turning the ball over less. They ended up getting five field goals against in the desert. They just couldn't quite get the efficiency they needed in the red zone. Convert a couple of those field goals to touchdowns this week against the softer defense in Indianapolis, and I think you're going to see San Francisco get into the mid to high 20s. Meanwhile,
yeah, talk about that. If you had that under, if you had the under in that game, boy, that had to be a sweaty one. Just how many times were those?
Yeah,
maybe not in the red zone, but they crossed the 30 both teams probably about a dozen times. And yeah,
every time I looked in, every time I flipped into that game, the Niners were inside the 25-yard line, and they just, for whatever reason, they couldn't plug it in.
I mean, both squads were getting down, getting down, crossing the 50 on a regular basis, and field goal, field goal, field goal, and kept it under for you.
Yep, and you know these two. The other secret about this particular game that I like is these two teams are running pretty fast pace. Week in, week out, they're snapping the ball before the clock winds all the way down. I also think this is going to be a relatively close kind of back and forth game, which lends itself to an over. So there's just there's kind of a lot of small things here that I think all add up together to look for an over in Indianapolis with the Niners. Probably not coming up with the W. Who would you pick to win that one?
Not the viewing public. That's boy, that's an ugly game. I could lean Niners the there. Public.
Yeah, no, that's the losers are going to be. Yeah, you can guarantee the losers are going to be anyone who gets that game as their. Yeah, their
if you live in the morning. Greater in the greater Indianapolis area, I hope and pray you shelled out the money for the DirecTV package there where you get the Sunday ticket so you can watch something else. And I guess there's always a CBS game. You know, why don't you tune over to the Giants Chargers game because that's that might be a better 0-4 versus 0-4 compared to the. Was that 0-4, 1-3 with the Colts? Boy, that's some. You got two 0-4 teams. You got the Niners and the Colts. You got the Jets and the Browns.
Yeah.
You got the maybe the Mariota-less Titans versus the Dolphins.
Yep. Oh. You got the Derek Carr-less Raiders against the Ravens. Yeah, this is good. This is ugly week. All right, so the over was my look there. The last game where I have an angle on in the morning is the over in the Chargers-Giants game. And this feels like a trap a little bit. This is maybe the last one that I added on my card, and I may, in the end, depending on where this number goes, I may bag out of this one. I took the over here. Rivers and Manning are facing off against each other. You have a healthy, receiving core on both sides of the ball. You're having each side of, each team is struggling to run the ball, which means I think you're going to see pretty pass heavy approaches. And you're seeing two teams that are having difficulty stopping the pass. And all that to me adds up to a pretty high scoring affair in New York. You have a situation where the Chargers are going west to east and playing at 10 in the morning their time. Which would preclude me from backing them. Meanwhile, the Giants still are coached by Bob McAdoo and still are quarterbacked by Eli Manning, which would preclude me from backing them. So my look here is the over. Is there a side you like in this one, or are you with me on the total, or do you think I should be looking under here?
I'm going to wait and see what this total does heading into the weekend. I lean the same way as you, but I don't feel as confident as you to actually put it on my card. Yeah, this is somebody's getting a win unless
somebody.
Maybe not with these 10-minute overtimes, man. They're going quick. All of a sudden, you look at these overtime games. There's like 3 minutes left in the game. Like, oh, we're getting a tie.
Dude, the Niners almost ran out the whole overtime period against the Cardinals. That was unbelievable.
I think it would be very fitting to get a tie. And McAdoo would just he might be like a cyborg or something. He just never has any emotion to his face. They'll make the worst play or a huge pick and they'll pan to him, the camera will show him, and he just get this stupid look in his face, like he's just staring off into space.
Yeah.
I don't do you fire him if they lose? They're at home.
He's barely
they're
home, got control favorite. Of this team.
If the let's say the Chargers win by a touchdown or better. And they look pretty bad. Leave him in the Meadowlands.
Does he get canned? Yeah. You bury him. You bury his body in the Meadowlands. Yeah.
Yeah, you shimmy off of this guy.
Yep. Dude, I think you could be onto something. If the Giants – I mean, the Giants, you could argue – I would listen to an argument that the Patriots have been the most disappointing team through 4 weeks. But as I've talked to –
I'd agree. You're garbage.
They They're in preseason mode, man. They're going to snap into it any day now. Meanwhile, the Giants at 0-4, man. They're probably your leader in the clubhouse for most disappointing team, which puts Bob McAdoo squarely on the hot seat. He's refuses to give up play calling duties for whatever reason, even though the offense never really feels like they have rhythm, even though they have, you know, some of the most dynamic weapons in the entire game. But yeah, let's see a breakout here from the Giants offense. I think they probably win by a touchdown or more here, and I think this one ends like 27-20 or 31-24 or something along those lines. Then we cash an over ticket in the Meadowlands. So,
yeah, it could be one of those nice Eli couple picks, maybe a pick six, and then they end up throwing the ball a lot. I think both teams
Rivers could throw a pick six too, man. Dude, if we got dueling pick sixes, that would be sweet.
You've seen the Giants running game. They're going to be having to throw the ball because it just doesn't work to run.
Yeah. The last game in the morning, skipping, obviously. We don't know anything about Mariota or Castle is going to be starting for Tennessee. And even if I did know for sure who was going to start, I would probably be skipping this game because Miami's is a dumpster fire. Tennessee just got their clocks cleaned 57 to whatever. This is a must skip game. Do you have any thoughts on Tennessee, Miami?
Yeah, I don't like it. That's another one. God, this is. I'm just looking at this card, just weeping at some point.
Garbage, here. Man.
Yeah, it's not great. That's another one where Miami. Gosh, they look good their first week, didn't they? I'm trying to think. Yeah, they looked all right. And
I thought Jay Ajayi was running the ball like the guy we remember from last season. Their defense was playing downhill.
And honestly, I had the Saints, and I won on the Saints, but that first drive, they looked great. And then after that pick, it's like the care level was gone.
No. I was so high on Gase coming into the season, and I thought just based on his coaching ability alone that the Miami would pull out games like the game they had against the Saints, where they ought to win. And Cutler should have stayed retired. I don't know what Gase is doing sticking with Cutler either. Like, it made sense to me with Tannehill last year because Tannehill, you know, he had shown flashes of solid play. It was just a matter of his O-line was never healthy, and you know, he just didn't have time. He didn't have he was a beat off. He had guys, receivers dropping balls that would have made huge differences early in the season. He stuck with his guy Tannehill. He won over the locker room. I don't know why he's sticking with Cutler, man. Cutler is done, and it's just, he's done with the sport. And if you're done with the NFL, then you know where you shouldn't be on Sunday morning. You shouldn't be playing football. And I don't know why he's not looking at Matt Moore in this game. I don't know why, you know, if he had made the poll, and if he had given Moore a shot here, I'd probably be keeping a close eye. And if we saw Matt Castle is the starter for the Tennessee, I'd probably back Miami here because you're never going to get a chance to buy lower on them. But with all the uncertainty and with Cutler out there, this is a must stay away for me. And that takes us through the morning games. You want to take a quick break?
Yeah.
Yeah, the beginning to middle of October, actually all of October. This is my favorite sports month of my month, I think.
March Madness,
I love it.
But you have all four sports going. College is just starting their midweek. Yeah, football, MAC games.
NHL starting tonight. Sun Belt is on tonight. Wild card baseball. Wild card baseball is so good, and then we get into baseball playoffs, which are just fun to watch. This is the best time of year for sports, and I'll fight anyone who thinks otherwise. Let's talk about these afternoon games. I am taking my strongest position of the season so far in the Rams-Seahawks game. And I got to say, this was a surprising open for both the line and the total. The look ahead for this game, going back to, let's say, April, was Seahawks -3. And sure enough, it opened Rams -2. Rams are home, playing in the Coliseum. Not much of a home field advantage. So that kind of gives you some insight. The bookmakers right now think that the Rams are as good, if not a little better, a team than the Seahawks. Does that sound about right to you?
Obviously probably the surprise team of the year. That offense is...
Yeah.
I can see that D-line eating on Sunday afternoon against the Seahawks. Yep. I might even, if it's still, what do we got, 47.5? I'm leaning on this over just because it seems like Seattle, and granted, Seattle got some defensive touchdowns, so, you know, temper the expectations on them putting up that many points every week. But they seem to get the offense right a little bit, and the Rams' offense is just rolling. Goff's on pace for 4,500 yards, and Gurley seems to look all right. He's catching passes out of the backfield. I can definitely see a higher scoring game here. I'm leaning on the over. I'm going to kind of wait to see. I feel like it obviously get bet up the day of the game, but I'll wait to see if I can catch a 47 somewhere.
Okay, so let me try to shake your confidence a little bit here. I am all about this under, and this is actually the first two unit play I put in for the season so far.
Oh, Jesus.
And just on the basis of recency bias, people remember seeing Seattle in prime time scoring 48 points. People look at the trends for the Rams and they see the Rams are on 6-0 to the over, 6 in a row right now. Their games have gone over. The Rams have put two performances together this season where they've scored 40 plus points. No one else can say that. Goff does look like a real deal quarterback. McVay has done a season. McVay is your leader in the clubhouse through one quarter for coach of the year. He's got Goff, and he's got this offense absolutely clicking. A lot of that is born out of some pretty excellent offensive line play, great scheming, and oh, by the way, the Rams have done all of this against some pretty bad defenses. The Rams got the benefit of hanging 35 against the Cowboys last weekend, and the Cowboys were hurting, deeply hurting in the secondary coming off of a short week because they played on Monday night against the Cardinals. They scored at will against the Niners on Thursday Night Football, again, caught a defense on a short week and a defense that was missing some key pieces. And a defense that's not very good. And then they hung their first 46 points on the Indianapolis Colts defense, the same team that we just saw the Seahawks score 48 against. So they've played, and the Redskins was their fourth game, the one game they lost. And that's really the only defense of the four they've played so far that you can say was, you know, relatively, you know, at least average, given the full suite of 32 teams. The Skins at least have an average, if not a little better defense, and they held the Rams to 20. So I think to a decent degree, I think the Rams are perceived as being right on offense and being a strong offensive team, a little bit born out of who they've played. The Seahawks are going to be by far and away the toughest defense they've played this season. The Seahawks also are going to be they have a couple of playmakers in the secondary, in particular Earl Thomas, who will be by far and away the best safety that Goff has thrown against this season. And, oh, if you don't remember, Goff had his debut against the Seahawks on Thursday Night Football last year. Did not go well. Did not go well at all. And I could see a scenario play out where Goff makes a mistake or two early. And let's say he throws a pick to in the red zone to Earl Thomas or something like that, and the Seahawks get in his head a little bit, and he turtles a little here, and you see them struggle to move the ball, because without the threat of the passing game, then Seattle can key on Todd Gurley, who has probably been the MVP of the Rams to this point in the season. And, so I can see the Seattle defense really putting a lid on the Rams, keeping them under 20. And then I flipped the script here. Yes, Seahawks were able to score a lot against the Colts. A lot of that was born out of their defensive turnovers, short fields, and actual
two were defensive touchdowns.
And one of them was a blown fourth down at the end of the game that was totally meaningless. It was the game was well out of reach, and they went for it on fourth and broke it for a touchdown. The Russell Wilson still does not look 100% to me. I don't really know what's going on with him, but he's got some limitations in the passing game. They have to. It takes till they really get him out of the pocket and make him make rushing attempts before their offense really looks right. And so I got a funny feeling that the Seahawks are not going to be going with that out of the gate here. They tend to start games in this plodding, no urgency offense that is just ugly and awful. And their offensive line is not good enough to help their offense build any kind of rhythm. The Rams defensive line, I think, is going to make them pay. This is the kind of game
Cliff Averill?
Yeah. Cliff Averill's out, isn't he?
Yeah, that's a big part of it too. Yeah. I think that it's going to hurt there.
Yeah.
Big part of that.
Aaron Donald that I think has 5 sacks in this game on Wilson, and Robert Quinn, he's going to be a demon as well. But mostly, the way I see this playing out is punt city. You know, this is an intensely important game for division standing. These are two teams that match up with each other poorly. And for these reasons, I was blown out of my socks when I saw they opened this at 46. I was thinking we were going to see a 41-42. I remember very well Seattle going to the Coliseum and playing in the heat against the Rams in week 2 last season. I think that game ended 9-7 or 10-6. It was an awful game and never even came close to sniffing the total. And I could see a very similar situation play out. The last and final angle I wanted to bring up, which is my wild card, this is what kind of gave me confidence to really kick this up to a 2-unit play on the under. The Seahawks desperately struggle in the heat on the grass. If you go back and kind of look through the last several years, as long as Russell Wilson's been out there, on grass in general, he's played fairly poorly. It slows him down just enough to where he's not creating enough offense with his feet. And you add a little bit of heat, which the Seattle guys are not used to playing in. They practice in the nice, cool Pacific Northwest. It's going to be 80 degrees in LA on Sunday, which means in the Coliseum at field level, it's going to be about 90, 92. So this is going to be a tough, hot game. I think you see, and Seattle's going to be without, they lost Carson. Carson's not playing in this game. He has a broken leg or whatever.
Don't you think that means they lean on the pass a little more? I don't think their run game's going to be, we'll see what the game plan is without Carson because everybody else in that backfield hasn't looked nearly as good as him. That definitely does hurt their offense. But I'm hoping that they'll lean a little more on the passing game.
What kind of final score are you thinking if you want the over 47?
Rams 49, Seattle 14.
Interesting. Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. I definitely am just going to go with it. Sometimes I feel like, and I thought at first of like all the recency bias and how they scored, but I just don't. I think the Seahawks defense is a little overrated. They're not what they once were. Averill out. I think the Rams can go put up 24 points, and I think the Seahawks hopefully can continue some of their success they had in the second half against a very terrible. But sometimes it takes the old slump buster. Who's the baseball player that said that? You just need to go out and play the Colts, get that offense right.
Slump buster. Was that Mark Grace? I think that was a Mark Grace quote. It was some guy from the Cubs back in the day.
I just Googled it.
Okay. Interesting. So I'm heavy on the under here. And I could live to regret this, obviously. Betting the under is a dangerous game in the NFL these days. But this is, my favorite spot of the week.
It usually works out. So.
Yeah, this is my favorite one of the week, and we will see if we can get almost everyone in the universe to change the channel by halftime over to what might be the better game of the week. Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers heading to Dallas. You got a rematch of the playoff game last year, which we saw Green Bay headed to Dallas and win, 44-41 on the miracle magical Mason Crosby, or the miracle magical Rodgers to that game was going to overtime. There was really no doubt. They got a magical completion, deep completion to Cook. Jared Cook used to be on the Packers, if you didn't know, for like one hot second. And then Mason Crosby kicked like a 50-yarder to win against the Cowboys in Jerry World. And here they turn around, they head back down to Jerry World. Dallas is clearly going to have a little bit of revenge on their minds. I think to a degree, in addition to the fact that Dallas was at a rest disadvantage against the Rams last week, I kind of wonder if they weren't looking ahead a little bit to this rematch against the Pack.
Yeah, they looked pretty bad in that second half.
Yeah, if the Cowboys lose this game, they go 2-3. Is that right? They've beaten the Cowboys. They beat the Cardinals and they beat the Giants, so they would go.
They'd be in Patriots territory. Hey.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Packers are in control of their division, having just beaten the Bears, and they head to Minnesota next week. So the Packers, to a degree, this game means a little less to them than the game they played last week, and a little less to them than the game they play next week. And, oh, by the way, Dallas wants a little revenge. All this suggests to me you should play Dallas -2, but I'm not doing that.
Don't you think Rodgers is just going to carve that defense up? I mean, Jared Goff did to him. He's going to roll out and find whoever their fourth receiver is, like he does. Like,
yeah.
There's going to be some receiver that comes off the goddamn bench out of the stands and goes for 160 yards. It doesn't matter who they put out there at receiver. He'll find them.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, all that said, I think we see, a relatively similar game play out to what we saw in the playoffs last year, where these teams scored on each other at will. And for those reasons, I was happy to bet the over on a relatively high total of 52.5. Betting high totals is not for the weak stomach, because, you know, there's a chance you have a low scoring first quarter. You can be sweating this out. If you are concerned about the total and you want to see the game play out a little bit and see if Dallas tries to lean on the run early and eat some clock and keep Rodgers off the field, then you might be able to find a live total that's a little more reasonable number. I could see if this is like a 3-7 game after the end of the first quarter, you could very well see like a total in the 46-47 range live. But eventually Rodgers is going to get the ball into the hands of his playmakers, who are all reasonably healthy. Although I guess their running back Montgomery is a little banged up.
He's going to try to play, I guess.
Okay.
They're coming off
the extra rest from Thursday night to Sunday. Mm-hmm. So they should be relatively fresh. I think both teams here are going to be able to find the offense they need to keep this game competitive. And I think you see one or both teams end in the 30-plus point range, which makes 52.5 my look for this game. Yeah.
I'm going to take the pack at a short little money line there. I think it's probably about +115, +120.
I think you're going to see about +120. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah,
there's some money. You're not alone, man. The early money on this one did show up for the Pack. And so there looks like there's a reasonably sharp position, along with kind of most of the bets placed, although the ticket count is really low so far. So a lot lower than I would have expected. Given that this is the best game of the day on Sunday, I would have guessed
you'd already see
close to like 10K tickets, but there's only about 4,500 tickets on this one so far. But the early sharp money did show up on the pack money line. I think they were expecting to see more support for Aaron Rodgers in the pack, and this could close as a pick 'em. I wouldn't be shocked, to be honest.
You're not used to the Cowboys bet up. You know, you think of the Cowboys, such a public team getting bet up, and I was hoping to. I didn't touch it right away. I was hoping for it to get up to 130, maybe 135. I don't think I'm gonna get a better number right now.
You watched a lot of that Rams Cowboys game. Do you think Zeke is getting right finally? He looks like he's starting to get in game shape.
I think teams kind of figured out that they're just going to try to stop him and try to make Dak beat him. That's the game plan and see what happens. So, they're going to get it done through the air. I don't think the Packers defense is, top notch. I think Dak can definitely do some damage against that defensive backfield. I like your overlook. It's actually sitting at 40 or 52 right now on five dimes. Maybe you should double dip. I think that's a two-unit play. Two-unit play.
Right. I kind of double dipped a little bit. I bet at bookmaker I got 52.5, but should have looked at five dimes first because I went to go five. I went to do a little lotto ticket total parlay. Then I threw Green Bay in there, and they're in there at 52 minus 110.
31-21 final, huh?
31-21 final does get me the push, huh? Does lose the straight up play.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, well, 30-21 is the real nightmare. Let's see the only other afternoon game, which, I came into this one thinking I would probably be backing Baltimore on the road at Oakland with EJ Manuel in at quarterback for Oakland. I thought we were going to see a little higher line. It looks like we're sitting at minus 2.5 right now, which means if you're going to back Baltimore, you might as well just take the money line. Baltimore has the better defense by far of these two teams. EJ Manuel, while he looked competent against the Broncos, I don't have a lot of confidence that he's beaten a defense that's as good as Baltimore. I thought Baltimore kind of pulled their heads out of their asses in the second half against Pittsburgh. They just had dug too deep a hole to get the W. But I will look for. We'll look for that money line. I'm going to keep an eye on it, and if I add anything to my card, it's probably going to be a Baltimore money line play. But some of that may depend on how the rest of these lines move, and if I need to have flexibility in my bankroll to buy out any of these plays or anything like that. You have a side in that one. Does Baltimore intrigue you at all, or do you think Oakland kind of bounces back after two lackluster weekends on the road?
I will probably just stay away with that from the way the Ravens have been up and down this year, and then the backup quarterback. We'll just wait and see. I think if it is a play for anything, you do got to back up the Ravens, who have their starting quarterback.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, granted, 600 all 600 yards he's thrown for in four games.
He may be the 31st best starting quarterback of all 32, but he at least is the starter.
It's like the Thursday Night Football. It's on.
Baltimore.
On. Baltimore. He showed up to the ballpark.
He's there.
Sunday night.
This is the last one on the card. Sunday, KC at Houston. Kind of a great little primetime game. Didn't necessarily look as good on the schedule preseason as it does now. Preseason, I would have been like, why in the hell aren't they putting Green Bay Dallas in this spot? Why in the world do you want KC Houston? But now here we are, Houston, our last undefeated team. Can they go 5-0? Or does Deshaun Watson have the juice right now?
No, I'm on KC.
Yeah, I am.
And I try to talk myself out of it a bunch. I think it's one of those where I was expecting the Chiefs to be a bigger favorite here when I looked at this one before last time. Yep. I thought I was going to pay over a field goal.
Yep.
Anything under three here is a pretty good bet in my mind. Just they're a much better team. That's a much better defense.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, even a little bit of the short rest factor is a little dicey, yeah. I guess, if you want to put a little damper on it. But I really, really like the Chiefs in this spot.
Yeah,
you know, Houston, I don't know how I have to defend backing a 4-0 team, I guess.
Yeah, right. They win the game. Yeah, Kansas City has the look of the team that everyone expects week in, week out is going to come back to earth. They keep hanging lines that are too low, and they just cover every spread to infinity and beyond. Did you get a kick out of that Monday night game? That finish? That was unbelievable. Casey,
yeah, I had a teaser.
The fumble
every single teaser would cash, so...
Yeah, the Iron Cross teaser cash. But what the hell was that?
I have a buddy who's my own personal rain cloud as far as just ultimate Washington. He had both Washington and the under, which thank Andy Reid for that. I don't know what he wanted, too much time on the clock for some dumb reason. Too much time for Justin Houston, not the team. But I cannot imagine having those tickets and feeling that way. Like, that's just, you can't go to sleep after something like that. You have to laugh it off.
And no,
I've been on both sides of that plenty of times where something silly happens and you win a bet you shouldn't have won or lose a bet you shouldn't have lost. But boy, you have to feel bad for some people on that one. And I had nothing but a teaser and a little, you know, prop bet fun on the side. And that was never in doubt as far as plus 14 under 55.
Yeah. I was on the under, and I was on a lot of alt unders. And at 23:20, I was counting my under 43.5. I was counting my under 44.5. And I was not even thinking about my under 49.5. Thank God I got 49.5. It was the early in the week number, because it got bet down to 47. So everyone that bet it the day of lost. I figured it was over. Looked at the score app and realized what the deuce happened. They ran back and
what had transpired.
Yeah, flipped the TV back on in like a cold sweat, like they were going to be lining up to kick the extra point. And I was panicked that it was going to get to 50 out of nowhere. And thank God for Andy Reid.
I guess the kicker already had his shoulder pads off was the deal.
Yeah, exactly.
He was in the shower already.
He was already in the shower. So they had Alex Smith go out and take a knee. Thank God. Because if that had gone over and I had that would have been about a 1K swing if he kicks that extra. I mean, it was a $300 swing with my alt overs going up in smoke. But it would have been about a 1K swing if they had kicked the extra point also. So that was a... That was interesting, man. That'll go down in history because it was the only game on. There was nothing else on. That must have been one of their biggest handles of the year.
It was a $350,000 swing for the CG books.
Wow.
And not in their favor, obviously, because it went favored over. The book took it. But so $350,000 swing on that stupid play. They have to hate Andy Reid.
Oh, seriously. How do you bungle the time in a way that allows that to happen? How do you not make sure that when you kick the game-winning field goal that it's not the last play of the game? That is like 101, man. Anyway, let me back up my KC position here a little bit here, and then let's call it a night, huh? KC and Alex Smith. They match up well in the passing game against Houston's kind of lackluster pass defense. Houston can stop the pass if they can get to the passer. Houston can and the KC offensive line, although they are going to be potentially missing some key pieces, and we'll have to keep an eye on the injury report for the offensive line. But if they can hold off the Bulls on parade, then give Alex Smith the opportunity to find his guys down the field. I think you see KC here win fairly comfortably. This feels like the kind of game where they get the kickoff, score a touchdown, and we're never really sweating this one.
Throwing Ray Heels machine lyrics in there? What are we doing?
Oh, Bulls on Parade?
Yeah, there we go.
That's the nickname for the pass rush, Clowney and Watt and Merciless. They call them then.
I think the way their offense, you say, Captain Checkdown, but Captain Checkdown looks good against a fast pass rush. Get that ball out quick, get it to some speedy backs, get it to a couple of slot receivers, and tick, tick, tick down the field, and all of a sudden it's 38-0 Chiefs.
Yep. I'm probably going to look at carrying the as far as – I don't think I'm going to lay a bunch of alt spreads on the Chiefs. I don't think we're going to see them win by, like, 50 necessarily. I think they win comfortably, but I don't think it's going to be by that much. I will probably be looking at pairing, doing some parlays with the Kansas City money line and the under maybe. Because I see Deshaun Watson having a tough time against the Kansas City defense. This is going to be the by far the toughest defense he will have faced so far. The second toughest defense he faced was Cincinnati, and the defense for KC I think is going to really make it for a long day for him. We will see how all of this plays out this coming weekend. I hope you enjoy this spectacular sports time of year, Andy. It's so great.
Yeah, I only had two plays. I think I only had two plays at the beginning of this podcast, and all of a sudden I'm six deep on my card. So once again, you've talked me into some stuff, and
that's
just talking
great.
It out like well, this, I think. So hopefully we can continue success. How did your card turn out total last year or last week? I guess I didn't really
last
look.
Week,
I don't
I,
care about
last week I was
do.
Yeah, last week on my card plays, I was down. I think I was 4-7 last week, so I was down -3. But I had so much in on that Seattle over. I was balls deep in the alternative overs there, so that made up.
Yeah, everything you talked about on that just made me pound more and more and more on that.
Yeah.
That makes a week if you can double dip or pound it, you know, play a two-unit play and it comes through in spades for you.
Yep. So this will be a fun week and a lot of close games and hopefully a lot of overs. We'll hit that lotto ticket. I don't think I mentioned it. My lotto ticket is over on the Giants, over on the Steelers, over on the Colts, over on the Cowboys, and under on the Rams. So four overs and one under, 24-1. And we'll see you at the window.
Yeah, it's your turn. You got to catch up with me on those parlays.
That's right, man. I need my five legger to make it home.
Yeah, best of luck on that. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys Monday.
Okay.
After all,
great
this,
podcast.
After all this hashes out on it. You know, you can't play the games on paper.
Yep. Great, great, great podcast. Good job, buddy.
All right. We'll see you.
Bye-bye.